computer. Okay, we're in Proverbs 10. We're starting with verse 6, and we're going to open with prayer. Father, we thank you for once again that we can get together and look into your word. I pray that you would speak to each heart here today, show each of us just those words that, and important things for each of us that you would have us to know, and work your work in our lives that we might do your will. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, verse 6, blessings are upon the head of the righteous, but lawlessness covers the mouth of the wicked. What do you, any thoughts, anybody out there? Why are they on their, why are they on the head of the righteous?
I'm sorry, we're on Proverbs 10, verse
6. Was that Debbie saying something?
Proverbs 10, verse 6. Because, continuation from last time, remember, we had to stop.
In the middle of one.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't have anything.
Well, what does it mean? What does it mean to have blessing on your head?
I don't know. I would always interpret that as just meaning blessings follow your life.
Yeah, it could. I mean, it could just be a metaphor. I think that would be the simple reading of it. Yeah. One thought that came to me is, well, who is the head of the righteous?
Christ.
Is it possible that this could actually be referring to the fact that, you know how we read last week that that a righteous son is a blessing to his father?
Mm-hmm.
Is this also saying in some way that the righteous are a blessing, you know, the righteousness of God's children reflect or bless him?
Mm.
You see? Just a thought. That's a thought that came to me. And then it says, but, it always contrasts. And I was talking about the head. It says, but the mouth of the wicked covers lawlessness. And I think that's true. You know, it talks about the false witness, the person who, because it's not like the mouth of the wicked does lawlessness. It's that it lies and deceives and covers over.
Yeah. I think about that whenever I hear these politicians.
Hear the politicians testifying.
Yeah. They always want everything to sound very peaceful and loving, but they're really just concealing their violence.
Right. Yeah, very true. The name of the righteous is invoked in blessing, but the fame of the wicked rots. Just trying to.
I don't know how that.
Questions, what questions does it raise? Any questions? Because the thing is to ask the question of the text, so to speak.
Yeah.
The name.
Well,
even if it's just the simple and obvious meaning, I mean, we can start there. We start with the simple meaning, which seems to be.
I don't see that this is true at all, actually.
You don't. And why do you say that?
Well,
that's a good question.
We're tearing down monuments of people who were at least pious.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we do remember the names of the wicked men.
Okay. Does so, that maybe that says something about us?
Yeah.
You know, the Jews always have this saying, when you mention the name of someone like Hitler or some other person who was a great evildoer or Rasha, as they would say, they always say, may his name be blotted out after they mention his name. I think that's the idea that's invoked, that's being referenced here, that righteous people are going to want to forget the evildoers. They're not going to be building statues to them or trying to remember them. I think today the problem is that those pious men that you're referring to are seen as being evildoers in the eyes of a lot of several people in our society, or many people in our society. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily for just reasons, but because they're viewed as being racists or, and I mean, you have to, I'm not even going to render a judgment on that. But obviously, if you think they're evildoers, you're going to want to blot their name out.
Yeah.
And I, you know, but I think the way you have to read this is that given a person who sees things correctly or sees things from God's perspective, because that's who a righteous man is. A righteous man isn't somebody that people who have a perverted sense of right and wrong say is righteous, because they're going to say evil is good and good is evil.
Yeah.
And they're going to honor the evil man and they're going to despise the righteous man. These are things that are taught in the scriptures. But given a community that is honoring God and that has a right understanding of what is good and evil, this is true. The name of the righteous will be invoked as a blessing. May you be like so-and-so, who was not renowned for his righteousness. And he whose heart is wise accepts commands, but he whose speech is foolish, comes to grief. Okay.
Again, I think we've talked about this before, just that the wisdom listens to correction and receives mm-hmm. those types of commands.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
But a crafty fool will fall.
Mm-hmm. He who lives blamelessly lives safely, but he who walks a crooked path will be found out. We don't have to comment deeply on every one of these. I'm not trying to suggest that, but he who winks his eye causes sorrow, but he whose speech is foolish comes to grief. Now here we're going with the speech that's foolish again. And it's really a repetition of the line from verse 8, isn't it?
Yeah.
A lot of these do repeat. I think we talked about winking with the eye earlier, before too.
Yeah.
And
and we have another repetition in this next verse here.
The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life. And then the second part, but lawlessness covers the mouth of the wicked. Or now this time, instead of saying it's the same thing. Lawlessness covers the mouth of the wicked, it says. The translation that I was looking online at, actually, and I think you can read this the other way just as easily. I was saying the mouth of the wicked covers lawlessness. And the NAS translates it that way. The mouth of the wicked conceals violence. So
yeah, mine says, but violence covers the mouth of the
wicked. It can be read either way. And when I look at the text, it seems more like it should be the other, that the mouth of the wicked conceals lawlessness, as opposed to lawlessness covers the mouth. I don't know, but it is vague in the original.
Mm-hmm.
Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers up all faults. Now that's quoted by Paul, isn't it? Love covers a multitude, charity covers a multitude of sins.
Yeah.
Amazing how the, you know, they aren't quoting the reference verse, but they, in the New Testament, you often see scripture quote, Old Testament scriptures quoted.
Yeah, my commentary says that it's not, that this is not referring to salvation, and I would disagree with that.
What is it, salvation? Maybe it doesn't have anything to do with salvation, but why would it, why would you think it did?
Well, because I used to, well, I thought a lot about this, and it reminds me of where it says, perfect love casts out fear.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. What does that mean? And so when we think about Christ and his love for us, there, that should remove our
fear
of, and in the same way, his love towards us, I guess, covers all sins.
Right. Now, why is the commentary saying that it, in that sense, I would agree with you. Why does it say it is not pertaining to
this? Commentary says that this verse describes interpersonal relationships, not salvation. When people respond in love to each other, they cover over the sins or offenses that would otherwise come between them.
I would agree with that too, but are they therefore mutually exclusive?
Right. I don't think that they have to be, because like I said, I think it's think it's more significant when you think of it in terms of Christ and his work.
Yeah. Well, I think it's true on both levels.
Yeah.
Because when Paul quotes it in Corinth, I think it's Corinthians 13. 1 Corinthians 13. I'm going to look it up. I think this is in terms of, maybe I'm wrong. I'm going to look that up.
I have my Bible app open right now.
Yeah, I do too, but could you look it up?
What specifically?
I think it says,
love covers.
Covereth a multitude of sins. Covereth a multitude of sins.
I just have references to Proverbs, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, let me try. Oh, maybe I was wrong.
And then the verse I was referring to is 1 John 4:18. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear.
Yeah. I think I might be wrong then.
Oh, well.
Okay, because I don't see it. I can't find a reference using the concordance here.
It's okay.
No, it's okay. I just wanted to be sure I checked. I want to just check one more thing. Actually, First Pete. It was Peter, not Paul. First Peter 4, verse 8. Where he says, above, and this is from the King James now, and above all things, have fervent charity among yourselves, for charity shall cover the multitude of sins. And charity there, of course, is agape, which is love. So it is quoted, but by Peter, not Paul.
Okay.
But that's an interpersonal relationship. He's saying have it among yourselves. So I think it's true on both levels.
Yeah.
Wisdom is to be found on the lips of the, it says intelligent here, and I don't know. Actually the wise. I shouldn't say actually, but.
Yeah, mine says wisdom is found on the lips of him who has understanding.
Understanding. Okay.
But
now, wait a minute.
It's the void of understanding.
What verse are we looking at now?
13.
Okay, I see what happened. When I went, I'm in Peter instead of Proverbs.
Oh.
I'm saying, what in the world am I reading? Okay, Proverbs 10, 13. Okay. Okay. Wisdom is to be found on the lips of the intelligent, but okay, they're saying on the lips of the intelligent.
Nothing. I'm not sure what we're investigating here.
Yeah, it's certainly the lips. I'm looking at each word here. Okay, I see. Yeah, okay, I get the understanding. In the lips, the King James Version says, in the lips of him that understanding, wisdom is found. That's good.
Yeah, I like the King James and the New King James Version. I don't know.
No, I mean, it's very literal, you know. It's a very literal translation. The other are trying to find, I guess, more modern equivalents to understanding and wisdom. And so you come up with, well, the wisdom is pretty common in all of them. And that's the original there is Chokhmah again, which is almost always translated with wisdom. But then this other, you know, understanding is translated as this wisdom or intelligent and
right.
Or twisted around intelligent wisdom is found. So
I don't, okay, well, let's
continue. I'll let it go, but I mean, you get the idea.
How edifying this is for any of the attendees.
I'm sorry. I will
stop. No, I'm just saying,
you're right.
We're trying to, you know, pick words, and I don't really know what we're taking away from any of this.
Probably nothing.
So let's continue.
Yes.
With verse 14.
Read some, John.
All right. Wise people store up knowledge, but the mouth of the foolish is near destruction. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The rich man's wealth is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty. The labor of the righteous leads to life. The wages of the wicked sin. Okay. He who keeps instruction is in the way of life, but he who refuses correction goes astray. Whoever hides hatred has lying lips, and whoever spreads slander is a fool. In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked is worth little. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for lack of wisdom. That's quoted elsewhere, isn't it? My people die for lack of knowledge.
Yeah, I think that's true. I'd have to. I don't know where it sounds. Let's find the. Hosea 4:6. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge.
Yeah. Okay. Well. The blessing of the Lord makes one rich, and he adds no sorrow with it. To do evil is like sport to a fool, but a man of understanding has wisdom. The fear of the wicked will come upon him, and the desire of the righteous will be granted. When the whirlwind passes by, the wicked is no more, but the righteous has an everlasting foundation. I'm sorry. No, that was just making me think.
Yeah.
That.
Which verse are we on now?
25, and it says, "When the whirlwind passes by, the wicked is no more."
Okay.
That was making me think of when also Scripture says, "You sow the wind, and you'll reap the whirlwind." Reap the
whirlwind. Yeah, which is another passage in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
I'm gonna see if I can find it. Oops, not that way. I won't.
Enough to do my good deed.
Oh, my thing is. So, bye bye. Linda's leaving.
Right now. Ecclesiastes and Hosea as well. Well,
yeah.
Actually, Hosea.
Hosea 8:7.
Yeah.
They've sown the wind, they shall reap the whirlwind. And then in Ecclesiastes,
it's not.
Not
really the same. I'm sorry. Yeah. Just
my program. Looking for sow and reap. Yeah.
Okay. So that was verse
25.
Now we're on, as vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the lazy man to those who send him.
Right.
The fear of the Lord prolongs days, but the years of the wicked will be shortened. The hope of the righteous will be gladness, but the expectation of the wicked will perish. The way of the Lord is strength for the upright, but destruction will come to the workers of iniquity. The righteous will never be removed, but the wicked will not inhabit the earth. The mouth of the righteous brings forth wisdom, but the perverse tongue will be cut out. The lips of the righteous know what is acceptable, but the mouth of the wicked what is perverse.
Mm-hmm. I think verse 22 is a key verse to remember. It's the blessing of the Lord that makes rich. Mm-hmm. And in my translation, it says, and no toil can increase it. So it's like, it's not your, just adding emphasis to, it's not your effort that is going to make you rich. It's the blessing of the Lord.
Yeah.
I don't know how, if that's, I mean, that's one interpretation of it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and I think that that's always important to keep in front of our, at the forefront of our mind, is that all the blessings come from Him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's important, because it's if you forget that, it leads you into a lot of, it leads you away from trusting the Lord, is what it does. And you start trusting in yourself.
Yeah.
Let's go on to verse chapter 11. False scales are an abomination to the Lord, and honest weight pleases Him. And that you see over and over again in the prophets. I was reading in... I think it was the last chapter of Micah. And there's a long passage about, I'm sure it was Micah. Yeah, imagine. Well, there's, the magistrate and the rich man. I thought there was one where it mentioned the false balance. Maybe I'm wrong. Oh, yeah, in Micah 6, it's actually in verse 6, chapter 6, verse 10, I guess, where he says, "Will I overlook in the wicked man's house the granaries of wickedness and the accursed short ephah," which is a measure. It's a unit of measurement. "Shall he be acquitted despite wicked balances and a bag of fraudulent weights, whose rich men are full of lawlessness and whose inhabitants speak treachery with tongues of deceit in their mouth?" Now that's just one passage that just enumerates how those, that behavior, you know, trying to use a deceptive measurement to take advantage of other people. So we are continuing. Let's see, 10, 11.
Right.
When arrogance appears, disgrace follows. That's like pride cometh before destruction.
Right.
But wisdom is with those who are unassuming. The integrity of the upright guides them. The deviousness of the treacherous leads them to ruin. That's interesting. In other words, an upright man is one who is straightforward, or he's not devious. He's upright. It's or straight, all those adjectives. Therefore, he doesn't think in ways, you know, how can I cheat somebody? And that guides his behavior. His behavior is guided by the fact that it just seems wrong to him to do things that are done in a devious way. But a treacherous person who loves deviousness, who has deviousness in his heart, is going to be led to continually act that way, which will ultimately result in his ruin.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wealth is of no avail on the day of wrath, which is the day of judgment, but righteousness saves from death. The righteous, so the blameless man smooths his way, but the wicked man is felled by his wickedness. The righteousness of the upright saves them, but the treacherous are trapped by their malice.
Mm-hmm.
At death, the hopes of a wicked man are doomed, and the ambition of evil men come to nothing. The righteous man is rescued from trouble, and the wicked man takes his place. The impious man destroys his neighbor through his speech, but through their knowledge, the righteous are rescued.
You want me to take over?
Yeah, please.
All right, we're on verse 10. When it goes well with the righteous, the city rejoices. And when the wicked perish, there is jubilation. But the blessing of the upright, by the blessing of the upright, the city is exalted, but is overthrown by the mouth of the wicked. He who is devoid of wisdom despises his neighbor, but a man of understanding holds his peace. A talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is of a faithful spirit conceals a matter.
Now stop there, because we were talking last time, I think, about talebearing, weren't we? I can't remember.
Well, I think specifically we were talking about telling the truth with evil intent.
Right. And somehow we got into, I was taught, we mentioned something about revealing secrets, but here's a verse that's very specific about that, revealing secrets. What verse? I've lost my place now.
You're on 13.
A base fellow gives away secrets, but a trustworthy soul keeps a confidence. Yes. Okay.
All right. Where there is no counsel, the people fall, but in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. He who is surety for a stranger will suffer, but one who hates being surety is secure. A gracious woman retains honor, but ruthless men retain riches. The merciful man does good for his own soul, but he who is cruel troubles his own flesh. The wicked man does deceptive work, but he who sows righteousness will have a sure reward. As righteousness leads to life, so he who pursues evil pursues it to his own death. Those who are of a perverse heart are an abomination to the Lord, but the blameless in their ways are his delight. Though they join forces, the wicked will not go unpunished, but the posterity of the righteous will be delivered. As a ring of gold and swine snout, so is the lovely woman who lacks discretion. that verse is great too. Because it's the gold ring is supposed to be something that is highly valuable. And it's something that has intrinsic value, and to put it in a pig's nose, that's such a great comparison.
Because what the analogy is that
intrinsic value
for a woman to be beautiful is like a gold ring. It's a value, but if the beauty is possessed by someone who doesn't have sense or moral discretion, it's like, you know, they're the pig because of that, and that beauty is wasted then on that person that doesn't have that.
So you can be a beautiful woman, outwardly, but if you lack discretion, it's like a gold ring in a pig's
nose. Right, that's what it's saying.
That's a great verse.
What the righteous desire can only be good. What the wicked hope for stirs wrath. One man gives generously and ends with more. Another stints on doing the right thing and incurs a loss. I think that's a lot related to the verse, the blessing. It's the blessing of the Lord that enriches. Because if you're thinking it's my labor that makes me rich, you're going to be more inclined then to want to be stingy, because you figure, well, I got all this by my labor. I'm not going to give it away. Then it's going to make me poor. But the person who realizes that it's the blessing of the Lord that makes him rich is going to be more inclined to share the blessing with others, because he knows that that's pleasing to God, and the one who gave can give more. And it's a principle that to whom much is given shall much be given. And to the one who doesn't utilize what God has given, the one who hides his talent, whatever, however you want to put it, is the one who actually suffers loss.
Yeah, well said.
A generous person enjoys prosperity. He who satisfies others shall himself be sated. He who withholds grain earns the curses of the people, but blessings are on the head of the one who dispenses it. He who earnestly seeks what is good pursues what is pleasing. He who is bent upon evil, upon him it shall come. He who trusts in his wealth shall fall, but the righteous shall flourish like foliage. He who makes trouble for his household shall inherit the wind. A fool is a slave to the wise-hearted. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life. The wise man captivates people. If the righteous on earth get their deserts, how much more the wicked man and the sinner? Want to take some in 12, John?
I was just reading what my version says.
Okay.
Take the time. That was okay. All right. 12. Whoever loves instruction loves knowledge, but he who hates correction is stupid. A good man obtains favor from the Lord, but a man of wicked intentions he will condemn. A man is not established by wickedness, but the root of the righteous cannot be moved. An excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who causes shame is like rottenness in his bones. The thoughts of the righteous are right, but the counsels of the wicked are deceitful. The words of the wicked are lie in wait for blood, but the mouth of the upright will deliver them. The wicked are overthrown and are no more, but the house of the righteous will stand. A man will be commended according to his wisdom, but he who is of a perverse heart will be despised. Better is the one who is slighted but has a servant than he who honors himself but lacks bread. A righteous man regards the life of his animal, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. That's one of my favorite verses. Yeah,
I like that too.
He who tills his land will be satisfied with bread, but he who follows frivolity is devoid of understanding. The wicked covet the catch of evil men, but the root of the righteous yields fruit. The wicked is ensnared by the transgression of his lips, but the righteous will come through trouble. A man will be satisfied with good by the fruit of his mouth, and the recompense of a man's hands will be rendered to him. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise. A fool's wrath is known at once, but a prudent man covers shame. No, I was just thinking about that other proverb where it says, and lean not on your own understanding.
Yeah. Trust the Lord, that's Proverbs right. 3. Trust
the Lord with all your heart. Yeah. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he shall direct your paths.
Mm-hmm.
But 15, in Proverbs 12:15, this is the way of a fool is right in his own eyes. It's like the exact opposite of what that is. So, yeah, that's all I was thinking of. 17. He who speaks truth declares righteousness, but a false witness is deceit. There is one who speaks like the piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise promotes health. The truthful lips shall be established forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment. Deceit is in the heart of those who devise evil, but counselors of peace have joy. No grave trouble will overtake the righteous, but the wicked shall be filled with evil. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who deal truthfully are his delight. A prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaims foolishness. The hand of the diligent will rule, but the lazy man will be put to forced labor.
You know, what's interesting here, just to stop, John,
this is
similar to the one we just read a few passages up where it talks about tilling the soil. Let's see, what was that? He who tills is verse 11. He who tills land shall have food and plenty, but he who pursues vanity is devoid of sense. And here it says, the hand of the diligent. I don't know. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I think I know where you were going, where there's this theme of working and being satisfied.
And at the same time, it's this one verse modifying the understanding of the other, because we did put a lot of emphasis on the blessing of the Lord that enriches. It is the blessing of the Lord that enriches, but at the same time, the Proverbs constantly assert that it's diligent hands that enrich. This is verse 4 of chapter 10. Negligent hands cause poverty, but diligent hands enrich. And after saying that in verse 4, the next chapter, it says it's blessing of the Lord that enriches. And then, you know, it keeps playing the one off the other. And it's that synthesis of both of those ideas that I think the Bible is trying to convey, that we should be diligent, and yet we should recognize the fact that it's ultimately the blessing of the Lord that makes us rich, and not be trusting in the fact that we're diligent, let's say, although we should be all the time.
Yeah. So what verse are we on then?
25.
Anxiety in the heart of man causes depression, but a good word makes it glad. Mm-hmm. the righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray. Ain't that the truth? The lazy man does not boast what he took in hunting, but diligence is man's precious possession. And the way of righteousness is life, and in its pathway there is no death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we'll do one more. Okay, John? We'll do 13.
Yeah, we can do that.
A wise son, it is through the discipline of his father. The scoffer, he never heard reproof. This talks to the parents, because what it's saying is it's the parents' discipline that caused that results in the son being wise. And if you have a son who is not wise, one who is a scoffer, scoffer is a person who thinks he's wise. That's why he's scoffing at everybody else. But that's the person who wasn't corrected. It's an interesting thing. A man enjoys good from the fruit of his speech, but out of the throat of the treacherous comes lawlessness. He who guards his tongue preserves his life. He who opens wide his lips, it is his ruin. A lazy man craves but has nothing. The diligent shall feast on rich fare. There's an interesting lesson, I think, in there. In other words, when we desire something, it is expected that we should take action to achieve that and not just expect it to come without any effort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, the theme that I've been thinking about over these last couple of chapters that we've been studying this morning is the diligent
mm-hmm.
work, which leads to security and blessing, contrasted with the laziness and the pursuit of frivolity, which I think is really significant.
Right.
Because in all the, I know a lot of people, and I've known this for years, that they might have a one-bedroom apartment and stuff like that, but in that they have the latest phones, the latest TVs, the latest technology. And so my point is, they can afford frivolities, but they don't have the
mm-hmm.
the knowledge to maybe, instead of, I don't know, I guess I'm saying they should be saving that money instead
mm-hmm. and
buying something and actually generating real wealth instead of pursuing and desiring things that are essentially worthless.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Do that. A lot of people have old, and then they say, oh, well, I can't afford that. And I can say you can, but you're choosing to waste the money on things that are.
You know what I think this is related? I don't know
if that means anything in light of what the scripture is saying. And I don't know. I guess
it does. I think it has a lot of relative, it's relative very much to what we were reading in chapter 11, where it says, he who satisfies others shall himself be sated. In that the righteous man is not one who's looking to see how he can make his life or pleasurable. He's trying or do good to himself. He's primarily concerned with doing good for other people. And that's what that's why he is diligent. He's diligent to be productive. It's the productive man is the one who generates a wealth that overflows and helps and benefits others besides himself. Whereas the slothful man is going to say, well, just so I can get something and I can consume it right now for me, I don't care about anybody else. So that results in a different kind of mentality. It results in, I've got $50. I'm going to buy something that I can enjoy right now. Whereas the diligent man's going to say, I've got $50. How can I use this so I can benefit other people? I can make more. Not that I shouldn't have something to eat, but that what not only I can eat and enjoy what I have, but others can have benefit also. It's like, it's a different mentality.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Paul says that, look not every man after the things of himself, but the things of others, right? Yeah. I'm going to look that verse up because I want to see what the context is. Ooh, not that way.
Philippians 2:4.
Philippians?
Philippians 2:4.
That was fast, John. Good. Yes. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others.
Yeah.
Good principle. I think that's what's really being discussed here in Proverbs, too.
Yeah. That was good commentary, Dad.
So we are up now to
verse 5, I believe.
5. A righteous man hates lies. The wicked man is vile and disgraceful. Righteousness protects him whose way is blameless. Wickedness subverts the sinner. One man pretends to be rich and has nothing. Mm-hmm. Another professes to be poor and has much wealth.
That's 100% true too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can. You can.
I know, like Lawrence, for example, he's not rich, but he wants everybody to think he's rich. So everything he does is for this external show. And it's like, again, all these toys and gadgets and things like that reflect wealth, but it's not real. And then you look at someone like Pete, who looks like he's just some regular dude, and he genuinely is rich. So it's, I see that a lot too. It's the person who makes himself look poor, yet he's probably very rich. Like Ebenezer Scrooge. He was blowing out candles and stuff like that, yet he could afford that all day.
Well, what do you think the lesson here is from that? Is it saying
ostentatiousness will lead to poverty?
I don't know if it says that. I think it may be more related to verse 5, a righteous man hates lies. It's just that, and the righteousness is riches. All virtues, all godly virtues are true wealth. What's more valuable, money? What are you going to do with money? It only has temporal value. You can eat the food you can buy with money, but you can't eat the money.
Yeah.
So
what's the point of
having it's limited and money is even limited in what it can do for you. But the point is the true values, we often, because they don't have a monetary equivalent, we tend to despise them. But this is a value, to love truth and to hate lies. And if you are one who loves truth, why would you want to put on a show to pretend you're something you're not?
You know, I think that is a very big problem and very prevalent today with TikTok and Instagram. It's like there's all these people that try to portray this wealthy lifestyle, but it's all fake. And why would you want to live a life like that? I don't know.
Now, you see, the Bible does also value riches. Look at verse 8. Riches are a ransom for a man's life.
Right.
It's not that they're worthless, but you have to have a perspective where you see what use riches. What did Jesus say? He says the make friends with the unrighteous mammon of this world.
Yeah.
In other words, there's a value for it to it, but and it should be used to do good. But again, we're back to this consuming it upon our lusts or using it in an appropriate way. The poor never heard a reproof. The light of the righteous is radiant. The lamp of the wicked is extinguished.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Because there's a lot of verses that talk about the lamp and the light.
Yeah.
Both the Old and New Testament. The light comes from the lamp.
Right.
The lamp, I believe, the Bible says that the spirit of man is the lamp of the Lord. I think Proverbs says that. Mm-hmm. You can look that up if you wanted to, but it's the righteous man who is able to have his light shine, the light shine from his spirit that's in him. Or the wicked man is,
yeah,
there's no light. There's no light there.
Proverbs 20, 27.
20, 27.
The spirit of the man is the lamp of the Lord.
Yep. And, you know, the wise virgins had oil in their lamps.
Yeah.
So they could show forth the light. Arrogance yields nothing but strife. Wisdom belongs to those who seek advice. Wealth may dwindle to less than nothing, but he who gathers little by little increases it. There's another important principle about wealth. It's the people who want to get rich quick.
Yeah.
That come to ruin almost always, inevitably. Because then the temptation, and usually get rich quick schemes, are schemes to actually defraud the person who wants to get rich because of the, and it's that lust to get something for nothing that leads the person into being swindled by those type of schemes. Whereas the person who's satisfied to do on an honest day's work for an honest dollar and accumulate wealth little by little, that's the lasting wealth. Whereas the other is a vain kind of wealth. It's not real.
Yeah, that's really true. That's what I think bothers me so much when you hear those stories about someone taking advantage of some like elderly person or getting life insurance. It's like that person worked diligently and poured their whole life, and you think you can just come by and get it through some dishonest means. It's like, I hate that. That's why it's, and there's so much of that. I mean, look at the idiots now stealing catalytic converters and stuff like that. Everybody just wants to like, oh, we can just make money. Or how about, well, remember we were reading that or watching the news special about during the COVID relief fund, all of a sudden all the, you know, like there was like, what, 200 billion in fraudulent claims of people like, oh yeah, I need money to pay my employees. And it was all, because everyone just sees like, oh, they're giving out money to employers. I have a business. It's called, you know, and they all come up with these schemes to just steal from the government and rob. And it's like, it's out of control. But this is a true statement that you won't keep those, that money. It'll be lost. And the only true wealth that is retained is one that has been, obtained by honest labor. And I see that's true too. And that's another principle that this generation has lost. It's like the idea, it's like, look, when you graduate from high school or college, you're going to get a crappy little apartment and you're barely going to be able to afford that, let alone food and get, but that's just life. That's the way it is. And then you work and you work, and over the next couple of decades, you'll get a house, you'll be fine. But that whole idea of that is lost now. Now we're just like, no, I want to just get out of high school and have the house and have the BMW. And they don't want to put in the 20 years of poverty.
I think there's maybe a little more that is involved here, John, in this sense. Part of, I think, the what brings people into this desire this impatience with having to work and gradually increase wealth is that our society is sort of generating discontent with little possessions. In other words, you have to have the gold chains, and you have to have the BMWs or whatever, you know, whatever is a symbol of status and power and wealth. Those things
have always existed.
They always have, but don't you think that it's at the point now where it's very difficult for a young person to be content because of this message is so prevalent. That's why I think people in the ghettos turn to dealing drugs, because they say they're thinking to themselves, there's no way out. I don't believe this. You can work, you know, get a job, and eventually you're going to, you know, be wealthy. They don't believe it because their concept of wealth is distorted. Because when you say wealthy, they're thinking of the guy who has the, you know, three Mercedes and all this gold.
All the gold. They're talking about like rich.
Yeah, or ostentatiously rich.
Right. Whereas I'm saying, as long as you can buy a piece of property and have a car, you're wealthy. But to them, they want to go beyond.
That's not wealth, because they're saying, how is that wealth? You know, anybody can do that. I want something that's going to show that I'm really wealthy. And there's no honest way to do that, they're thinking. And quite frankly, although it's not true that there's no honest way to do that, it's not everybody. I think it's true that not many people are going to have that kind of wealth. And I don't even know if they should, because with great wealth comes great responsibility. So if you can handle that kind of wealth and use it in a responsible way where you're benefiting others again, I think that's a great thing. But if you're going to consume it on your lust, you're going to be held responsible for that. I keep getting back to that. So how do you think the person who deals drugs and thereby achieves this state of wealth is going to stand in the day of judgment?
Yeah, they're not going.
That's the point.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's the next verse here, 12, where it says, hope deferred makes the heart sick.
Yeah.
Maybe they want to wait 20 years to buy.
That's the thing. It's that there's that hope that's put out there and it's unrealizable. And so the person's heart is corrupted and you turn to unrighteousness. It's an interesting thing.
And it's crazy.
But desire realized is a tree of life. I think it's also, I think, a word here that would suggest that we should have righteous desires. Does that make sense? In other words, desire itself is not, I was thinking about that this morning, desire itself is not wrong, but we should desire that which is righteous and that which is pleasing to God, that which is good. If you're going to fill your heart with unrighteous desires that can't be realized in a righteous way, then you're going to have this hope being deferred, because it's going to be very frustrating. You only have one, you don't have a natural way of achieving that hope, and it's going to sicken your heart. He who disdains, so I'm going to go on then. He who disdains a precept will be injured thereby. That's an interesting. He who respects a command will be rewarded. What is your translation?
He who despises the word will be destroyed.
Okay.
But he who fears the commandment will be rewarded.
Okay. That's what I wanted to do, get into. And I could see we were going a little bit of.
I'm not too crazy about your translation.
No, every once in a while, I I see what they're trying to do, but sometimes I think they lose the obvious in trying to do it.
So 14, right?
The instruction of a wise man is a fountain of life, enabling one to avoid deadly snares. Why don't you take the rest of the chapter, John?
Do All right. Good understanding gains favor, but the way of the unfaithful is hard. Every prudent man acts with knowledge, but a fool lays open his folly. A wicked messenger falls into trouble, but a faithful ambassador brings health. That's like the wicked messenger.
Dylan. Dylan's wicked messenger. There was a wicked messenger from Eli. He didn't come.
She's like, I love how a week never goes by without you. You're fucking quoting Dylan. There was a wicked messenger. Yeah. That's on John Wesley Harden, right?
Yep. With a heart who with the heart that magnified the smallest matter.
Yeah.
There's a lot of very scriptural. That song is very interesting. I love it.
All right. The faithful ambassador brings help. Poverty and shame will come to him who disdains correction, but he who regards a rebuke will be honored. A desire accomplished is sweet to the soul.
That relates back to hope.
Yeah.
Hope deferred.
Yeah.
Desire realizes the tree of life, and then says desire realizes the sweet to the soul.
Yeah. But it is an abomination to fools to depart from evil. He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. That's so well said.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're known by the company you
keep. Yeah.
You know, and it's true. And also, I've always thought that, what's that saying? Show me your friends and I'll know who you are, or something like that. Like, it's so true. It's like your friends are to a great extent reflected.
Yeah, I think the phrase is a man is known by the company he keeps.
Yeah.
Maybe that's from the Bible even. I don't know either.
It's very true. Your friends or your social circle is a reflection of who you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it can be very destructive. I think that if you do have a circle of friends who are degenerates, you've got to get rid of them and start making yourself new friends. And the sooner the better.
Yeah. So,
yeah, that's a great, great principle. He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Evil pursues sinners, but to the righteous, good shall be repaid. That's interesting. Evil pursues sinners?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, what is that?
You ever known some people who just seem to have one disaster after another pursuing them?
What's that?
Joe, there was this character in the Little Abner comic strips that his name was Joe, and then it was a bunch of letters that you couldn't pronounce. And there was always this thundercloud over his head, and it was raining on him, and the lightning was... And that's just the way that was the character. In other words, he was this guy who always had misfortune following him. And I don't know. I think that when your life is that way, it's probably, you should be looking to your life to see what's going on, because
you're like a habitual sinner. You're living a life of sin. Evil is going to be pursuing
you. You know, the guy who says, why is everybody always picking on me?
No, I know that.
You know what I mean?
You're thinking,
why is this happening to me? And it's, what are you doing though with your, you know, look in and examine your life if that's what's going on.
Like,
what?
I said, you're a victim blamer. No, but that's an amazing verse.
Yeah.
But to the righteous, good shall be repaid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous. Much food is in the fallow ground of the poor, but for lack of justice, there is waste. He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. Man, you could preach a whole sermon on that verse. The righteous eats to the satisfying of his soul, but the stomach of the wicked shall be in want.
Yeah. Just want to say something about that discipline. Yeah. Again, I'm thinking of my father because over and over again, I remember things that he told me and said, and you know some of the stories.
Yeah.
But the discipline, you don't have to see this as, oh, the father, you know, right away he takes the rod out and is beating his son. It isn't corporal punishment that's necessarily envisioned here. It's the fact that when the father sees the son thinking incorrectly, you know, going in the wrong direction, there's that corrective word right away.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a good thing to have, that kind of correction.
Yep.
All right. We did it. I'm going to turn off the recording here.
All right. And I'll contact you.